It's Draymond Green, kicking off my 14th NBA season and the new season of my podcast. And trust me, I'm not holding back. Listen to the Draymond Green Show wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, let's go around the NFL here on Sports Radio 610 on this Wednesday, where there's things that keep moving and shaking in the National Football League. And while the Texans and seven other teams continue to concern themselves with the playoffs, the rest of the NFL continues to concern themselves with what their teams will look like and who will be at the helm of their teams in the 2026 season. Obviously, the big news in the NFL was Mike Tomlin stepping away from the Steelers. And with that, it creates a very big void in the National Football League. And it puts another job that I think is pretty interesting out there. How people found out about this was very interesting as well. I would like to take you to Baltimore, where Steve Bisciotti was the owner, or is the owner, of the Baltimore Ravens, and obviously a big rival of the Steelers. They also are in this place where they're dealing with the head coaching spot. And oddly enough, Steve Bisciotti was speaking to the Assemble Media, something that does not happen a lot around the NFL, an owner in this moment speaking to the media. However, he found out about Mike Tomlin. In the moment, this is what he was saying on the podium.
At Pittsburgh.
He did? Is it official?
That's what I keep hearing. So, is he a candidate here?
Holy s***, Mike, wouldn't that be awesome? Only if John takes the Pittsburgh job. Wow, wouldn't that be interesting? I don't know. That thing last week maybe disqualified him for my... from my opening after our kicker missed a kick to let them advance. Good for Mike. Yeah, I don't know. Talk to him. I love Mike. I mean, I've admired Mike for 18 years. And that's really shocking that he did it that way. But yeah, that's kind of crazy.
A couple things that are important here. That was in the moment. That wasn't plan what you're going to say. Hey, you're going to be asked about Mike Tomlin. That was, a true emotion, which led to the second thing. That's not a no. That's not a no.
It's not a no. I feel like it would be a no. I think he understands.
Do you really? I don't know.
He also said, I admired him for 18 years. He coached there for 19. Yeah. Which year was it you didn't admire?
It was 2011. He didn't like him that year.
He's like, bleep that guy that year.
Probably this year, to be honest.
Yeah, it probably was with the way that it ended. Him sending a kiss to the camera.
Crazier things have happened.
Fair enough. Yeah. But yeah, it seemed for at least a week, people were doing the Tyler Loop kick was an inflection point. Mm-hmm. And if that was the case, both of the coaches are now gone. But Bisciotti was asked if Tyler Loop did hit that kick, would John Harbaugh still be the coach?
Yeah.
If Tyler Loop makes that field goal, is John Harbaugh still here coaching this team?
For a week.
Damn.
For a week. Okay.
Damn.
Yeah, he probably knew it was over.
That's
early
rough.
On in the season.
That is rough.
I ain't gonna lie. He kind of entertaining, man.
Oh, he's great.
I didn't know he was this entertaining.
No, he's
like
great.
This.
Yeah, and very honest.
And you got to enjoy it while it lasts, because I thought it was very insightful what he was saying actually about his ownership of the team. He's 65 years old right now. And this was his conversation in that meeting or in that press conference about how long he'll own the team.
How long am I going to? Because I kind of always said, I don't think, well, I'm not passing it down to the family. I made that decision 25 years ago. I don't think that's healthy for my family. I've seen families feud and ruin over these damn teams, and I was determined not to do it. But when I watch guys like Art Blank and Steve Ross and Jerry Jones and Jerry talking about what part of his anatomy he would give up for a Super Bowl at 83 years old. I don't want to be there. I really don't. I want to win a couple Super Bowls and get the hell out. I'd love that to be in the next 10 years when I'm 75. That's my dream. If I got one of the top teams at 75, I'll probably stay till 76. So I'll probably bail somewhere around 10 years from now when I have a really bad season or back-to-back seasons. And he'll probably be coming with me.
Right? Eric said he's not a lifer either, so.
That guy is refreshing. I love his approach. By the way, you know, one of the teams has had, I'm not going to say, you know, fallen apart, but had some issues, you know, when the team gets handed down. Right here.
Oh, yeah. I wonder if he watched like Succession or whatever. Yeah. He looked at his family. He was like, nah, they will. Yeah.
I kind of appreciate that.
I did as well.
Because look, everybody don't want to be a team owner.
Yeah.
Like, so that's kind of, I know it sounds crazy to say, but it's a little bit inconsiderate for me. When you pass away, now I got to deal with this.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was like,
it's
look,
like any other business.
And you don't know.
I will get all the NFL money. And y'all can split that. I don't need y'all fighting over the football team.
And you don't know how invested in that, how passionate they are.
That's just like a regular business. If you have a tire shop and
I don't like tires.
Yeah. You're like, what am I going to do with this? Yeah. Like, I don't want this company.
My man said, I'm going to cash out.
Ooh, and in 10 years.
I do love also that
$10 billion at minimum.
I also love that he looked around and he's like, hey, they are not living right. I don't like the way that they're moving at all. I would like to be out of this business.
My favorite part is, damn, they had two back-to-back losing seasons and I'm out. Yeah. How many teams want to hear that from their owner?
Yeah, that was weird. Like, it was refreshing to hear it, seeing as we are not in Baltimore. I imagine if we're in Baltimore, we're like, just sell it now then.
Yeah.
If that's how you feel, just open this thing up.
Or just imagine being a Browns fan and you hear that from Yo. All right, bet.
Yeah, bet.
Please. Yes, please sell the team. Yes.
So shout out to Beat Steve Biscotti. I thought that was really interesting. A lot of eyes on who's the next coach there, who's the next coach in Pittsburgh. But Mike Tomlin, the thought is, especially as we talked about yesterday, because he stepped away and because he wasn't fired, the Steelers retain his rights. If somebody wanted him, they'd have to trade for him.
Right.
So people are thinking that he just steps into media. Have you thought about what would be the best media space for him? Well, I imagine that he's probably more of a studio desk guy as opposed to an analyst.
Really? I was going to go
You think he's an analyst?
That voice, those pipes, you know, the inside of a head coach. I mean, just the way he talks, that's built for in-game analysts.
Well, the thing that I always say is I hate an analyst who still has aspirations of
now
going back in
to be
coaching.
Yeah.
Because if they do, like, they usually hold back.
Yeah.
Tomlin might not be a hold back type of guy, but I hate it if you're in the booth and you're clearly holding back, because what are you here for?
Mm-hmm.
You're supposed to be giving me insight.
Yeah.
And give me your insight. I think that he'd be good on a table. Apparently, Fox is considered to be the favorite for him to step in with Strahan, Bradshaw, Howie Long, Gronkowski. Do you feel like that'd be the place to go, or would you see him maybe sliding into that Matt Ryan spot that's been vacated at CBS?
I think either Matt Ryan or Terry Bradshaw would be where he steps in. Bradshaw, it's already, and he even kind of is almost out. You can tell that he's already almost out. But Matt Ryan would be logical. If he can, you know, be, you know, critical enough, I think he would be great in the booth, man. I mean, just the sound, the insight, the, you know, being able to...
The quaint folksy stuff that he says.
But yes, all of it. And also just knowing, you know, what's happening on the field because he's defended it. He's, you know, coached it, all that. I think it'd be great if he can set it aside.
So happy trails to a couple of offensive coordinators. The big one, Kevin Petullo, was fired yesterday.
Get out of town.
It just had to happen. Well, let him tell it. He, I think, through a roundabout way, he was pretty upset. He felt like people did not give him enough credit for what he did there.
Not too bad.
Did Kevin Petullo deserve to be fired, John?
Yeah, I think so. I absolutely. Have you noticed the number of coordinators that are out there?
There's a lot of them, a lot of jobs that are opening up. So Petullo goes, and so for I don't know how many straight years now it is, the local boy, Jalen Hurts, will have yet another offensive coordinator. People are starting to ask, the streets are asking, does this need to go further up the train? Like, does Nick Sirianni need to have some reckoning
with
this?
And I think when you start, it's a classic sort of formula. You know, you start with the coordinators and then the special teams coordinator, and then it goes up to the head coach. I think this is just sort of survival, you know, survival for Sirianni. But yes, I think there's a strong case that can be made that he needs to go.
The other offensive coordinator that was let go, Greg Roman for the Chargers. Justin Herbert, obviously a very interesting figure around these parts because people are sick of hearing about Justin Herbert. I thought that this would work well with Greg Roman, because Greg Roman's history of an offensive coordinator is he comes in, he gives you a bump for 2-3 seasons, and then it looks bad.
Mm-hmm.
It was just bad
yeah.
there in, with the Chargers. They're wasting. They're wasting what
has
been.
How many years in is he?
Who, Justin Herbert?
Yeah.
Is
six?
It, is it? Yeah, it's been a number of them at this point.
Yeah, because he got paid. I want to say he got paid, was 2 years ago?
Yeah, something like that.
Justin Herbert has played, this is year six.
Yeah.
Mm. Two Pro Bowls in there, including this season. But dude, this is year six.
Past time.
And it hasn't been there for him.
Yeah, it's past time.
Don't forget about Texas legend Mike Devlin. He was the offensive line coach there.
Yeah.
He gone too.
Yeah, and I get it, right? Mm-hmm. You had some terrible injuries all the way through, and that's not going to help, but you can't have dudes just being olayed to your quarterback in the wild card round. It just can't be that.
Yeah.
So those coordinator positions are open, and it's interesting because I think there's more offensive coordinator candidates out there than there are offensive head coach.
Yes. Yeah, that's
really
kind of why I brought it up, and two of them are right here. You know, we're talking about Matt Burke, which I know we're going to get to.
Yeah, I was like, none of those names have popped up just yet in offensive coordinator searches, but also we're not in the heat of the offensive coordinator portion of this.
Yeah, and we don't know. I mean, some of them may have already been, back channeling it, you know, so to speak. But I think Ben McDaniels and Gerard Johnson could easily, or both, could easily move on. And that would be a direct hit to Nick Caley, who really relies on them a lot in the passing game.
We'll keep our eyes out on for that.
Yeah.
But more immediately, Matt Burke has officially joined the ranks of coaching carousel names as yesterday the Arizona Cardinals requested an interview for Matt Burke.
Arizona Cardinals, Tennessee Titans, apparently.
Did the Tennessee Titans actually?
I didn't
okay, so there's interest, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
But this is official. He's name on the board, Matt Burke.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to remember. I think Arizona had another defense coordinator that name eludes me right now. Does this feel like one that he could get, especially all coming off of the Jonathan Gannon tenure there?
Every owner that saw Monday night's game has Matt Burke at least on their list somewhere, if not now, somewhere down the line. You can talk about, hey, it's really D'Amico's defense, but people in the league know what Matt Burke, first of all, his resume. This wasn't just they put him there in the last 2 years. No, he's earned the right to be a candidate and has been a coordinator in the past. I think Matt Burke is, big-time candidate.
You confident that he can balance because the conversation that inevitably comes up when one of your coordinators is in one of these searches is, are they going to manage to balance the interview process with making sure that their team is ready for game day?
Yeah, I think the NFL, that's one of the things that the NFL does well. You can't even, begin to interview, not even Zoom calls, or maybe you can do Zoom calls. But anyway, you can't begin to interview until after you're done or you have the bye week. I think, who was it? Was it Denver coach maybe that was it Vance Joseph? Or somebody that had an interview because they were off. But that's, they do it the right way. So, yes, I think he can.
Yeah. This is going to be a place to watch. I don't know if there's been people doing the thing where they go, hey, there's some interesting defensive talent there, and can he bring that system there? Without doing that, I just wonder, how do you like the Cardinals' job as a potential opportunity? Now, it might just come down to it's one of 32, and if it's there, you have to, explore it. But how do you like that if you are Matt Burke as a potential landing spot?
I think Matt Burke has to be very, very serious about it and likes it a lot simply because, he's not, as much as everybody notices him and he's on a lot of lists, it's not like he's the hot candidate, the big name, the former coach.
That's what kind of make him perfect for Arizona, to be honest.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, because I think Jonathan Gannon, I don't think he was the hot girl on the block right there, but – it seemed like they kind of they like those type of hires.
Yes, yes, and I also think, there's an opportunity there for a quarterback. There's an opportunity there for him to bring in some players because people say, well, he's not going to be able to take Danielle Hunter and Will Anderson with him, and so maybe he's just benefiting. Or
he could take Gerard Johnson with him.
He could do that, but I'm saying he could build. He knows how to build that type of defense.
Yeah.
Because he's been around D'Amico and he's done it himself.
Yeah, we'll see how that continues to progress. I'm not going to lie, though. I remember probably when I was half awake scrolling on social media and seeing fans of, and I can't remember what team specifically that needed a defensive coordinator, looking at it like, I think we should get Matt Burke. And I'm like, you think he's going to make a lateral move?
Yeah.
What are you talking about?
These guys?
Yeah, yeah, just wild, wild. But they're people have been taking note of what Matt Burke does. Some other things that are maybe more, related on the field. Fred Warner says he's ready to return for the Niners.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that could be a huge maybe not a swing, but it could be, you know, big in making that side of the bracket a little bit more interesting. Because the Niners are a team that they are, what, a 7-point underdog versus mm-hmm. the Seahawks? Mm-hmm. Fred Warner in the middle of that defense does a lot to pull everything together. He is the glue of that defense, obviously playing the role that Azeez Al-Shaair does in this defense. Do you think that that can narrow the gap some
for the Niners? Absolutely. This is a team that is basically being held together with tape right now.
Yeah.
You know, they have so many injuries. And on the offense,
Eric Kendricks and Garrett Wallow were playing linebacker for him.
I saw that. I was like, Garrett Wallow.
Yeah, Garrett Wallow. Man. That's a Texas legend right there.
Yeah, that guy. He was a special teams guy, basically.
And Garrett Wallow, with all due respect to him.
Serial guy, too.
Yeah. This year, he was out here looking for a job a lot of times mm-hmm. during the season. And so he found that landing spot there because they just needed somebody.
So Garrett Wallow or Fred Warner? I don't know. It's close. No, it's not.
Hey, ask Nick Caserio that. It's close for him.
Well, it might be for him.
Yeah, I don't know if this closes the gap for them. But the thing that you can say is the Seahawks offense, it is pretty good, but I still have a little bit of an eye towards, does Sam Darnold hold up?
Yeah.
Because even last year, it was the playoffs where he turned into a pumpkin a little bit. And, of course, the two weeks prior to that. But then I wonder if you do have a Fred Warner who has that experience mm-hmm. In calling that guy, getting those guys in the right places. Does this look the same way? I don't know. It'll be an interesting thing to see.
I think it's a fair point, but I'm not necessarily like all in on Sam Darnold elite or anything, but I don't think he has a lot left to prove.
No. But it's not about proving it. It's about like having that same consistent level of play, mm-hmm. and we'll see. I still think, though, that the Seahawks defense is so good that we might not have much to talk about there, but there's a lot of fun football games on the docket for this weekend in the divisional round. One of those obviously being your Houston Texans going to New England to face off against the Patriots. Patriots 3-point favorites, remember, in this. But one of the things that maybe might give your Texans a chance to upset at least Vegas's view of this is, can they run the football? And to that question, in my early looks at the Patriots, I think yes. I'll tell you why. Next.
What's up? It's Draymond Green, back for my 14th NBA season and the new season of my podcast, The Draymond Green Show. Unfiltered takes, real hoop talk, and big-time guests. There's no holding back on the court or on the mic. Follow The Draymond Green Show wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, you're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. You know the folks. It's John Lopez, the OG. I'm Reginald Atatula and Figgy Fig, rocking with you on the ones and twos. You too, get involved with the program, 713-572-4610. Not the point, but as I scroll the internet looking at various different things, you know, as I continue to try and plot mm-hmm. the Houston Texans domination in various different ways.
Oh, we're plotting domination.
Apparently, Tyrell Shavers, I understand why you're saying who in this moment, wide receiver for the Bills, also has a torn ACL. He played on it in the second half, in fact, of that game last week. So he's gone. I mentioned, remember, that Gabe Davis is gone. Josh Palmer was put on IR as well. They barely have any wide receivers left.
Well, how do you feel about some of these guys like
on the practice squad? Because they have three wide receivers on their active roster right now. Mm-hmm. Yes, they can field the starting lineup. They have Brandon Cooks, Khalil Shakir, Keon Coleman, and then after that, it's dudes, man. Mecole Harmon's still in the league.
That's probably going to be the guy, huh?
He definitely gets elevated in my mind. And then maybe they elevate one more, but it's going to be a lot of 12 personnel for them.
Steven Gosnell.
Not sure who he is.
Christian,
to be honest.
Wilkerson?
Hadn't heard of him personally. So yeah, that's probably not going to help my desire to host an AFC championship game for the Bills to get a victory. But who knows? Maybe Ed Oliver coming back, you know, maybe he'll run some routes in addition to rushing the passer. I don't know. But we gotta worry about the New England Patriots. The Texans worry about their side, and whatever else happens will happen. And with that being the case, the Texans, I think, are going to be able to run the football here.
I do, too. What is your case? Because there's a couple things that just jump out at me.
Well, first and foremost, I was obviously shocked by the 112-yard performance for Woody Marks and the 140-something, a lot, yardage performance from the offense running anyways. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that they did really well, obviously, they had these duo blocks that they did really, a lot of great combination blocks. A lot of inside zone as well when they were starting to uptick on the, oh, this is working, we're just going to run it down your throat. And I had to go and ask one of my really football knowledgeable friends, I can say his name. I threw it out to a Super Bowl winning scout, Brian Broaddus. I was like, hey, does inside zone have like a natural advantage versus 3-4 fronts? And he was like, yeah, actually it does. I was like, okay, so this is something I had not considered. You know who runs a 3-4 front?
That would be the New England Patriots.
Yeah, the New England Patriots have a 3-4 front. So you know me, I had to go and see what are the statistics that I can use to maybe see what's been happening with this New England Patriots front. And I tried to go from week 10 forward, right? Because obviously the full season isn't necessarily giving you the best idea. What does the last half of the season tell you? And since week 10, the New England Patriots, against inside zone in particular, allowed 4.8 yards per rush. It was good for 28th in the league. They were one of the five worst teams stopping inside zone.
And you think defense with them.
I mean, at least when you think of Vrabel, but this team has really been a lot of Drake May and a decent amount of little bit here and there. Obviously, Christian Gonzalez on the backside is really good. On top of that, you talk about like a duo and man kind of things, which again are one of the concepts that the Texans did really well in this game, and they've done pretty well all season long. The Patriots allowed, interestingly enough, 3.4 yards per carry, which was fifth best. So oddly enough, they were pretty good in those circumstances. But inside zone, which I know this team likes running, this Texas team, they're really bad at. And I was like, huh, maybe this is here. The interior of their defensive line can be moved. It's something that up in those parts, they've had some concerns about. Now, they did bring back Milton Williams, who was one of their 3-4 defensive ends. And he looked good in their game last week. But and he's not in this sample of stats for a long time because he missed probably something like 6 weeks during the season. And then also their inside linebacker, Robert Spillane, who plays obviously linebacker, getting up in the run, that matters. He just came back as well. So does that change from being 28th versus inside zone to what? 15th? Like, are they going to be average? That's about where the Steelers were. I think that you have a possibility if you get up and if you're on your blocks, which it felt like they did pretty well, and with the schematic advantage that I think you can create using this inside zone, I think you could still probably run the ball. Maybe you don't run for, you know, 100, have a running back run for 100 yards, but you can still have an effective run game, which is necessary, I think, for the best versions of this Texans offense.
Yeah, no, look, I feel much the same way, and part of it is exactly what you said. When they and it was a thing of beauty, to be honest, the way they were double-teaming the nose or the interior tackle in this game and being able to get to the second level in the Steelers game it's been a revelation. But I think two other things just flat out, you know, that have been more recent, kind of what you're talking about. You're looking at the, you know, the last third of the season or so. This offensive line is just better. Line is just better at the outside positions too. Ariante Ursary, I'm not going to say revelation because he's a rookie and it's just about a development, but he's played really, really well, you know, in the pass game for sure. But certainly in the run game as well. And Trent Brown has been doing much the same thing. He really held the edge with some help from Blake Fisher.
He was throwing dudes out the club.
Yeah, Blake Fisher had, you know, probably his best game as a Texan outside of the, you know, getting smoked on a pass rush. But that's going to happen occasionally. So I think the edges are real good too. And then the other part that is truly a revelation is, you know, there is no more who's your number one running back. Woody Marks is your guy. Woody Marks has found that that comfort level, that ability to, you know, the proverbial, the game has slowed down and knowing when and where to cut and being able to hit the ball, I mean, to hit the hole, you know, at full speed when he knows it's there. So the combination of the offensive line, the ability to double team, how good they've been at that, and Woody Marks, you know, Nick Chubb has been a nice changeup, but Woody Marks is the running back.
It's Draymond Green, kicking off my 14th NBA season and the new season of my podcast. And trust me, I'm not holding back. Listen to the Draymond Green Show wherever you get your podcasts.
Sure, but I will say, though, seeing Nick Chubb look that effective,
as
he has been put on the back burner for a lot of the latter portions of the season, that was deeply encouraging as well, because I think there is something to be said for. I feel like we should name the blue tent, like the Woody Marks honorary tent, because he'd be in there all the damn time. Somewhat to his chagrin, I don't know if you saw, he seemed like he was pretty upset. He posted something on his Instagram story that I imagine was about the way that, you know, the Pittsburgh Steelers ended up on his ankle with the time that he went into the tent this game.
Yeah.
the possibility of Woody Marks missing a few plays, even though he'll come back and play, he'll tough through
it. He did it this past week.
But the possibility of him missing a few plays to maybe, knock on wood, wherever you are, missing substantial time because of one of these types of injuries, it's mitigated a little bit, especially if Nick Chubb looks, you know, useful in especially those inside zone reps, those duo reps, where he has an opportunity to, you know, read the blocks and use his feet well and kind of dance in the space like he did. I think that is helpful. Plus, we're another week removed from what Jawar Jordan was dealing with. Is this something where Jawar Jordan will be back? And now you have a three-man complement, and you can give them all a little bit of burn, see who's doing the best, and just let them go.
That's a great point on Jawar Jordan. I hadn't even really considered that. I thought high ankle sprain, he'd be still out, but we don't know. They're, by the way, they'll be taking the practice field here in a little bit more than an hour, so we will get some early looks at that thing, including Nico Collins, which I wouldn't expect to see him out there. But
if you see Nico Collins out there, honestly, I might call the NFL and the Texans myself, because ain't no way. Wait, what?
That guy was loopy. But no, Jawar Jordan might be something. And D'Amico Ryan's actually addressed this, and we were, you know, I played it for you before the show. You know, I think just the confidence level in how physical they can be on the front and what Woody Marks is doing has kind of been off the charts.
When it comes to the run game, if we want to have, you know, success, it's going to be us. It's about, you know, having that desire and that will to truly stay on your blocks, to truly trust your technique, trust the fundamentals, things you worked all off season, all training camp, all those things you work, like you got to put it on display. And you know the other team, like you mentioned, the Patriots, really good run defense. So it's never easy running the football, right? And that's what I like about it, because it's not easy. It's hard. A lot of people shy away from doing hard things. But if you want to have success in the playoffs, I feel like you have to be able to control the line of scrimmage and run the football really well. So that's what we have to do versus a really good run defense. And that's what it is at this time of year. You got, you know, two good teams going at it, and that's how it should be.
Yeah, that just the transformation up front, it reached its peak, really, I think, against the Steelers. I mean, they were just mauling fools. They took the life out of them. They tired them out. And then Woody Marks was tiring him out, and Nick Chubb, but tiring him out the way they were finishing runs. I feel very confident that they're going to be able to run the ball here.
And if they are, I think that very much bodes well for what this team's capability of winning it, especially because if you can get rid of those major turnovers, we know the idea of finishing, that is one of the keys to them finishing, is being able to run the football and take the life out of a team. It also kept the defense off the field, man. You limited possessions in that game, and you had those long 14 play drives that allowed that defense to be maximum fresh.
Yeah.
Like this is important, not just to the offensive side, because for one, you give yourself good third down circumstances, right? Yeah, third downs make the difference. That was the most glaring disparity in this game, in the wild card game, is that you were what, 10 of 15 on third down? And they were 2 of 14.
Yeah.
That was a glaring disparity of the game, and what made it the blowout that it was. If you can run the ball, you give yourself thirds and shorts, like what we saw in that game. Remember, 5.5 yards was the average on third down in that game.
Mm-hmm.
You do that, again, you give yourself a chance to win on offense, but then you give the defense an opportunity to be maximum fresh, get themselves into those long third downs on the other side, and beat the hell out of Drake May, which I think we're all invested in.
Yeah, we know why the 2 of 14 happened, because this defense was playing out of its mind. The 10 of 15 it points directly to the run game and the offensive line. Ultimately, comes back down to what you just said. You know, if C.J. Stroud can just eliminate any of the half the turnovers that you had, they'll be able to get it done.
Yeah. So I think that they will be able to run the football, but ultimately, like D'Amico Ryans was saying, there's a level of want to involved with it. And I think you saw that really show up in Pittsburgh. And it's not like I'm doubtful by any means, but I would love to see what they're capable of doing in that moment. And just to add a little bit of spice to the idea of the potential if the Texans run the football, you want to know what the success rate allowed is for the Patriots on third down?
I think we all do.
47.2%. It is the fifth worst
in
the NFL. If you can give yourself good, manageable third downs, you will continue drives versus the Steelers. This Patriots team.
Yeah.
So run the ball run it well.
Run the damn ball.
And you have an opportunity to really very much win this game.
Yeah, I'm with you.
All right, you're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. Somebody says, do the Texans still have to draft a running back high? That's a good question that we'll have to talk about, because I've for the while said that Woody Marks still probably profiles as like a running back too. Is he changing that narrative in your mind at all?
No.
Okay. All right. I just wanted to see. Hopefully we'll have three more games to make that decision based off of, right? But we'll have that conversation when we get to the offseason. Right now, we're still playing playoff football, baby, mm-hmm. here in the Loop on Sports Radio 610. All right, coming up next, let's get into what's popping. The Cougars with a dominant win, and the Rockets managed to get a victory themselves. Plus, a familiar face joins the Patriots. We'll talk about all that and more next. All right, let's get into what's popping here on this Wednesday in the Loop on Sports Radio 610. The Texans will be practicing, getting ready for their Sunday 2 p.m. matchup versus the New England Patriots. Excited to see what's happening there from the team, and we'll get you any updates that we see as soon as we see them. Also, happy trails to Adam Thielen, who apparently just announced his retirement not more than 20 minutes ago. Made a play in that game, so in a way, you retired another player.
Yeah, got rid of Tomlin, got rid of Thielen.
I like how you said got rid of him, like we threw him out.
That
the
brother
house.
Was gone at the beginning of the year, yeah. man.
He really and truly pretty
you
much
don't have
was.
To go home. Got to stay here.
Got to get the hell out of here is the way that I always hear that. All right, shout out to the Houston Cougars. How about it? They welcomed in West Virginia yesterday to the for Cheetah
mm-hmm,
Center.
Mm-hmm.
They beat the mess out of them boys.
They've been doing that with everybody. Talk about a team that, and we know the reason why. These freshmen have been good all year, but they are really, really getting into a groove big time.
Yeah. They needed to beat the hell out of West Virginia for what happened on the football field.
That's a
oh,
great
that's
point.
That's right.
Yeah.
Does
it? Did
Mr. Reggie over here talk about, oh, nah, West Virginia ain't good at all. Mm-hmm.
They aren't. That's why it was frustrating.
Hey,
lost to a bad
they
team.
They look real good. I was in the stands like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Like, you sure?
They had no business losing to that West Virginia team. I stand on that, and I'm still mad about it. Like, mm-hmm. that made me mad again, and I'm happy that the Cougs won 77-48 in this game. I was watching it, and shout out to Chris Sinak.
Don't gloss over that.
Yeah.
48.
Their previous lowest score, their lowest point total at this point for the Mountaineers was 56.
Yeah.
That's sick.
They forced 5 turnovers in the first 2 minutes. They were just strangling.
Who got the better defense, the Houston Cougs or the Houston Texans?
Ooh, that's a good question.
Yes.
Because it's close. I mean, what they have, like I saw that, you know, it was 5 turnovers the first 5 minutes. I think, was it 15 points in the first 15 minutes or something like that?
Yeah,
that
they were
strangling those guys.
West Virginia needed a pretty, like, they had 18 points in the first half, West Virginia.
Yeah.
They came out, knocked down some threes early in the second half to start trying to get this interesting. They had, like, clawed it down to 15 or something. It was like, oh, wow, we made a run.
Yeah.
Chris Sinak was fantastic. We're getting boards in this game.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, Milos Uzan had, yeah, it feels like he is.
Another one and done.
Kelvin Sampson was mm-hmm. giving him a lot of praise on just how his ethos, the way that he comes into the game, the mm-hmm. way that he plays. And he was basically like, whatever NBA team gets him is getting a great dude.
Not basically. He said that.
He is all in on Chris Sinak, and he should be. He was fantastic in this game. Milos Uzan was great from three. This team generally was great from three, and they're pretty good in this game. 11 three-pointers knocked down. But yeah. I will say, and shout out to Ocho, who is the dude who watches the most college basketball that I've ever met in my lifetime. Not necessarily true, but close.
Yeah.
Ocho has been pounding the drum, and we're kindred spirits and never being satisfied and always finding something to pick at. This team offensively it does look a little ugly at times. Like, they were taking a lot of outside shots, not a lot of penetration until later in the game, at least by my eye. It's one of those things. They depended a lot on the three-pointer. They depend a lot on getting second-chance opportunities at times. But they can do it, and their defense is stifling, and I think that works a lot more in college than it does
elsewhere.
Frustrating
when the threes aren't dropping, but they were dropping.
They were dropping enough. Yeah. They shot 31%, so I think it might have cooled in a point when I was not paying as much attention in this game. But the starters handled their business the way that they were supposed to, and they beat the mess out of West Virginia. The number 7 Cougs keep rolling on. That one loss still remains. What was that, Texas Tech earlier in the year?
Tech.
No, okay. I have to recall what that loss was. And it's hard to remember because it was a long time ago. It was Tennessee. That's right.
Yeah.
Rick Barnes' Tennessee was the one loss that they've had this season. And it doesn't look like it's going to happen. Another one's going to happen anytime soon. You can't necessarily say that for the Rockets, but they did get a win. They broke a 3-game losing streak at home versus the Bulls, a young, exciting Bulls team that is energetic. And you saw it in this game. But thankfully, the Rockets were able to turn up late in a way that they hadn't in those previous three games against the Trailblazers and the Kings. Managed to get it done. It was 119-113, the final versus the Bulls. And Kevin Durant just continues to be that dude. 28 points in this one, mm-hmm. taking all the difficult shots that he needs to take and knocking him down. But a dude that deserves some credit is J.D. Davison.
Yeah.
In this game, he comes in, and let me make sure I get his stat line correct. Jumps into the rotation, gets himself the most minutes off the bench of anybody. 9 points, 7 rebounds, 4 assists, a plus 14. That is a guard. That is a point guard mm-hmm. just doing what is necessary. And I think that was indicative of a conversation we had earlier. He just came in and he gave energy and he gave effort, which is one of those things that, weirdly enough, the Rockets haven't been doing enough.
And earned the right to do it again, to play some more. Durant obviously carrying the weight, but this was just one of those games where it wasn't always pretty. I knew there was a lot of late lead changes. You said earlier, and I was like, was that many? 34 lead changes, which is incredible. But it almost doesn't matter at this point, as much as they've been struggling and trying to find an identity, get Davison in there, obviously helped. Finished the game. It was a classic NBA game. Last 2 minutes, let's see what happens, and they got it done.
Yeah, they did. Yeah. I feel bad for waiting this long. Alper Şengün was really good in this game. Mm-hmm. 23-11 and a plus 19, not the end-all be-all by any means. It's just a stat to give you a general idea of what it was like with his minutes on the floor. A lot of fire, you know, did a great job working for rebounds, which is important, especially when he is on the floor as the only big a lot.
Mm-hmm.
They're getting back to running things through him and running it back to him, especially now that he's ramping up and getting back into the flow of things coming off of his injury. And that is a stabilizing force that's necessary for this team, especially as they still try and find what the predominant identity will be for them right now.
Yeah, you talk about what this team is doing. Did you see what Kevin Durant was tweeting about with the crowd?
Yes, that's exactly where I was going next, yeah. Because there was a picture taken of the late arriving crowd, rather.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't a picture, it was a video.
It was a video of what it looked like at tip-off.
Yeah, there were some red seats that you could see on the picture. A lot of them. Kevin Durant on his Twitter after the game, mind you, quote, "We're fashionably late down here, champ. Check back round mid-second quarter, and it's a different picture. Been that way in Houston since I've been in the league." And he's not wrong. It's
no,
one of those
not.
Things. I do appreciate that he very much is embracing being in Houston. And I love that because the Rockets fans are going to embrace him. He said, "We're fashionably late." He's like, "Nah, this is us down here. This is
I
how
hate
we
that
be.
He said that, man.
You do?
Now people going to be looking at that as the excuse. It's just like, man, that's not a good excuse for
it's
me.
It's
man.
Not, but no, they no. are going to be looking at it.
But we've had this conversation a number of times.
Yeah, no, he made it seem like, hey, that's how it is,
it's
man.
Good. It's
like,
good.
I'm sure the Houston Rockets like, no, we don't want this.
We want them there early. We,
yeah.
Yes.
What I will say, though, is the Rockets are doing their damnedest to try and get people in seats. They actually got something coming for tomorrow's game mm-hmm. where they're playing against the Thunder, right? So a rematch of the season opener, but they're doing a happy hour. So the tip-off's at 6:30 for the hour before tip-off. Domestic beers, hot dogs, soda, and popcorn, all 50% off. And I am going to be intrigued to see how and if that works at all to get people in the stands. They're not fighting against Thursday night football. I don't know that there's anything else mm-hmm. really major that you're thinking is competition. A big team in the Oklahoma City Thunder. If this doesn't do it, I do wonder would do it.
We do need to make note of that. I think it'll help a little bit anyway. 50% off? Hell yeah, I'll get that.
I mean, that's what a lot of people been kind of throwing at the Houston Texans a little bit. Like, oh, maybe give them half off on beers and all that.
But hurt.
Yeah, I'm curious to see how well this works.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it will be interesting to watch. We'll see. Somebody said, "Did you just say $10 beers?" Hey, get out to that Rockets game tomorrow. I'll see what's happening.
Yeah.
But make sure you get there early. That's obviously the thrust there. And then something that happened earlier today that we mentioned earlier in the show, I kind of want to dig into a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
Darrell Taylor just recently jettisoned from this Texans team after returning from IR. He's found a home.
Yeah.
And he will be seeing the Texans again very soon as he has joined the New England Patriots. I asked you this earlier. I'll ask it again. How much of this do you think is the espionage aspect of the football, trying to get more information? How much do you think is this him being a valuable pass rusher?
Oh, I think it's a factor. I can't put a percentage on it. But I think it's absolutely – I mean, the Patriots do this as well as anybody, trying to find any little sliver of an advantage. And, you know, especially when you're talking about a team in the Texans that keep things pretty straightforward defensively, you know, even just a call here, a call there could make a big difference for the Patriots. But they do need help, too. They do need help on the edge.
Yeah. And
and he was actually pretty good.
He was. And we said this when they released him. Mm-hmm. When was that? Last week? The idea is he was a good rusher. Just didn't feel like he was necessary for what they have with this team. You can get an element of speed with the guys that you have already. That is actually why I am interested in this from the Patriots perspective is I think that they do have potentially a need for speed. One, that is a position where if there was ever a plug-and-play position, edge rusher feels like that is absolutely a plug-and-play position.
That's the epitome of see ball, get ball.
And their outside rushers are Harold Landry III and Ke'Lavon Chaisson. And they don't necessarily inspire speed in my mind.
Yeah.
I think that they might be invested in actually playing.
Oh, he'll play some, but Darrell Taylor. Also a factor.
Right.
Yeah.
And that could be intriguing because your edges are, or your tackles rather, are Trent Brown, big dude, maybe not the most nimble per se, with all due respect to him. Ariante Arisuri, who has been fantastic, but also he can be gotten with the level of speed. And if there's somebody that knows how to rush these guys, that guy who has worked against them, I'm not going to say I'm afraid because that is not the emotion, but it does raise an eyebrow like, huh?
And has worked against them, you say, I think he's worked against them as much as anyone, if not more, just because of his role on the defense and facing the first team offense and knowing, you know, where he can have some success, et cetera. I think absolutely it could be a factor.
Yeah, so that's going to be of great interest to me personally in this game. Man, but there's a lot of things of interest in this game, clearly.
They're showing this guy Siamalu. I feel bad for him.
Oh, him just getting –
They showed it at least –
Sheldon Rankin messed his life up.
10, 12 times in a row.
Sheldon Rankin messed his life
getting,
up.
Just flat on his back, de-cleated as an offensive lineman. Man, that poor guy.
I mean, it's going to happen in the NFL. I think that you get that, but unfortunately, what are the chances that you end up with like a highlight that or a low light in that position that is just going to haunt you?
Yeah, it's going to stay with him.
But that's the Texans defense for you, right? I have a feeling that over there with the Patriots, they're looking at the left side of that offense like, please don't end up on a highlight reel because they could.
Yeah, they could.
They got a couple of rookies on the left side of their offensive line, and that could go poorly.
Yeah.
In fact, I think that in moments, it very much will.
And you said this yesterday, and I think it's important.
I be saying things.
You say things occasionally. Huh. Like, we have a pretty good hunch the Patriots know how good this defense is. And it is, I want to say scaring them. Let's just say it's a big concern, you know, what these Texans can do to that left side.
That's, I mean, Pat McAfee himself was, he put it on the, he put it on Twitter talking about how this defense brings the boo birds out of home teams because you're just, the home fans are going to get mad at you. But it's like, what do you want me to do?
Yeah.
They're monsters. Yeah. What are we supposed to do here?
Yeah.
It's so fun to be on this side of it, I've got to admit.
Yes, sir.
You're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. Coming up next, let's keep talking about this division round matchup. But in a way, we'll talk about it through the lens of this wild card game because you can't ignore how C.J. Stroud played Monday night. Is he closer to a fix than it appears? 713-572-4610. Let's talk about C.J. next.
What's up? It's Draymond Green. I'm back for my 14th NBA season, and my podcast, The Draymond Green Show, is back too. This season, I'm breaking down games, reacting to the biggest NBA stories, and sitting down with teammates, rivals, and culture shapers. And trust me, I'm not holding back, on the court or on the mic. Two new episodes every week, new segments, big conversations, real basketball talk for the real hoop heads. Listen to and follow The Draymond Green Show wherever you get your podcasts. We're back, we're better, let's get it.